I'm Marie Bernard, host of Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Join me Mondays at noon as we explore the universal energy that connects us all. Let's discuss our journey of self-discovery, joy, presence, and living with authenticity. We can create positive change in the world, and it starts within each one of us. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Hello and welcome to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. This is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, or you might be listening at Axe Radio Canada in Nova Scotia, or online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, or on the Co-Creator Network, or on Empower Radio. And today we're going to be talking about a new way to look at healing from trauma. It is tribal theory. We'll be speaking with Barbara Allen. She is a certified trauma therapist and crisis intervention worker. She's been active on the front lines for over 25 years. She's been featured on lots of shows. Whenever a crisis hits, she talks about it. And Barbara advances a unique creative trauma response model and believes that a crisis trauma-informed community is a therapeutic community, one that's prepared to maximize healthy connections with each other before, during, and after our time of need. Welcome to the show, Barbara.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yay, I'm glad. So I'm glad you could be here. And can you tell us a little bit, before we jump into tribal theory, how you got started as a crisis worker?
Oh, that was many moons ago. I actually started working off a 120-foot schooner off the west coast of Vancouver, Vancouver Island, working with adolescents who had addictions. And so we were dealing with those who were in crisis to the point that they had to leave their homes or be taken out of the community in one way or another. And instead of being put into security of some sort, we started taking them out on outward bound trips and things like that. So that was kind of the first crisis interactions that I started with.
Cool. And how did you developed tribal theory, correct?
Yes, I did, actually. It began about 8 years ago now when I was a clinical counselor for adolescents, and I also specialized in working with young offenders who were charged with sex offending.
Wow. And so how can you tell us about tribal theory and how it came about exactly?
Well, it sort of came about very simply. In my office, I always have a whiteboard on the back of the door, so I'm a visual learner, and I find that a lot of adolescents are also visual learners, or people in general. And I had a client come in one day who started talking about how they were feeling, and it you know, I started looking at the tattoos and the piercings, which I just love all the creativity of, and I went, let's look at this tribally and where you might sit in a tribe. And that was basically the beginning.
Hmm. All right, so should we just jump in? I'm not sure exactly how you teach this, because we're going to be doing a little bit of an overview this hour of tribal theory.
I can give you a bit of an overview, and I think it will resonate with folks, and hopefully they'll be able to visualize it a little bit. So basically how it works, tribal theory, is that it comes from the premise that we all have an authentic self. So we kind of land on the planet with a part of ourselves which has gifts that would work in a tribe, in certain parts of the tribe. And I keep it into three sections, which are the hunters, the guards, and the home bodies. So if you think of drawing a circle on the outside for the hunters, then an inner circle for the guards, and then a center circle for the home bodies. And when we authentically kind of land on the planet, we have gifts that authentically fit generally into one of those areas of the tribe. Is that making sense so far?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I'm just wondering if I should just let you go, or should I ask you questions
well,
as you're explaining
this? Well, whatever
works
is great. I'll just add a little bit, and then we can go from there. So the base is that if you're a hunter authentically and from a trauma perspective, keeping in mind that we don't have traumatic events as much as we do respond to the event. So keeping that in mind, because I think folks need to know that. They'll think what a traumatic event is for one person isn't for another. So that's in how we react. So it's our response that's traumatic as opposed to the event. But, for instance, if you're an authentic hunter and you've had to become a guard because of an event has happened in your family, so let's say you're the hunter that likes to, you know, have the characteristics of going out, you're not at home, you like to go out and travel, you like to go hunt for things, you like to do that. And then you're put in a position where you now have to become a guard. Maybe you have a parent who is disabled and you have to stay home with them, or a parent has died, or at some level you have to become a caregiver and stay close and care and guard your brothers or sisters, whatever that event may be. When you're taken away from your hunter authentic spot in the tribe and pulled into a guard mentality, you then will often take on maladaptive behaviors. And it's those maladaptive behaviors that turn into things that we will call, you know, not having a well-being or a mental well-being. So a hunter who's brought into a guard position may start to present with OCD behaviors or obsessive compulsive disorder, which I call only caring and daring. I kind of rename all those. And so those kind of things will start happening to that person. Or if they're a hunter and they brought into a homebody position where they have to stay at home, they'll start to feel trapped because that's not their authentic place. And then they may come up with other things like a hoarding kind of characteristic or reaction to, again, not being able to be authentic.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, I have lots of questions for you, so I'm going to, it's time for a break, so we'll be back with more Synchronicity in just a moment. This is Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul, and we'll be back in just a moment.
There's only one way that old clunker is going to make you feel good again. Donate it to Bullying Canada. Check this out. Free towing or pickup of your old vehicle. A tax-deductible receipt. And a super easy process. Online at bullyingcanada.ca. Get rid of that old vehicle and feel good about supporting real solutions for change in your community. Donate your old or used vehicle to Bullying Canada today. Full details online at bullyingcanada.ca.
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we're speaking with Barbara Allen. Her last name is spelled A-L-L-Y-N. You can find her at barbaraallen.ca, and we're talking about tribal theory with healing from trauma. Welcome back to the show, Barbara.
Oh, thank you.
Yay. So now you're talking about the hunters, the guards, and the homebodies, and this is how we come into this world as our authentic, who we are, just sort of our what our personality would be if we had nothing bad happen to us, right?
Yeah, basically, or if we were, if bad things are going to happen, but we're not prepared for them. So we're moved very quickly into a different part of the tribe without preparation.
Okay. So how do you figure out, because let's say you were talking about like the hunters who like to be out doing things, traveling and all of that. So they're forced to become a homebody because of they have to look at care for a parent or something. Now, let's say that they've been living that all as long as they can remember. How do they discover what their authentic position in the tribe should have been?
Yeah, always the first question I get and always the best one. what I ask people to do is if they do have relatives that are around to check in with them, keeping in mind that for the first 9 years of our lives, most of our history, most of our memories are written stories of somebody else, so stories we've been told by others. So with that in mind, if we go back and check in with family members or try to connect and see what our interests were when we were younger, I see it between around the age of 3 to 6, you can start seeing characteristics if people are in a relatively healthy environment, what their authentic self was. The other thing that seems to happen is as you're an adolescent, you find you'll start to be pulled back to what naturally you had a passion about, if you can move away from the fear. So we have this amygdala that's based on our fear reaction, and if you can get some support in moving a bit away from that fear into what you're passionate about, just asking somebody in their adolescent years, you'll find that they'll come up with things that they really wanted to do. And then if you move into the 40s and 50s and ask people what they would have loved to do or where they felt the most comfortable, that's pretty well your beginning of your target of where people would be within the tribe.
So I'm curious, what if you don't have any parents, you don't really, like, how do you know this? Even, because for me, like, I had depression from a very young age, so it kind of squashed all of my what would have been passions.
Yes, exactly. Now, some of the things, too, that have happened with people who have led a life very early, which is really challenging because we know how the brain responds to trauma and things like that, and just that feeling of abandonment or all the other things that can happen, is looking also into your past. And that's when we get into the trauma theory and it gets a little bit more challenging, is intergenerational trauma. So cellular trauma that has moved through the family. And if you look back, you'll find that you can start to connect with certain family members again who had a passion or a sense of authenticity, and that's another place to look. It takes some time and it takes some exploration, but there's different ways of doing it.
Awesome. So can we talk a bit more about what the role of the hunters, guards, and homebodies would have been, and then how that shifts if something happens?
Yeah, for hunters, for me, I would label ADHD, or attention directed in a higher dimension. When I use this work in a classroom, it's pretty easy, or families, it's pretty easy to see often who has that natural hunter or attention directed in a higher dimension. The hunter would need those skills to be able to survive. They'd need to be constantly aware of where they are, what was happening, great peripheral vision, other sensories awake and aware, and be able to actually not multitask, but be aware of many things happening at once. If you look at a guard, guards, a natural guard usually takes on a sense of empathy, very aware of others. Often folks who are empaths have a natural guard authenticity to them. But they also are think the worst first. Now, those who are in a guard mentality who may not authentically be there, that worst first turns into the only caring and daring or obsessive compulsive disorder. But those guards who are meant to be there authentically have an incredible way of problem solving, resolving, and being able to work maybe in communities such as policing, disaster response, those kind of things. They're naturals at it. They think the worst first, but they're able to resolve it also. Great critical thinkers. Homebodies are often our writers, our researchers, people who like to do more creative things, keep the home fires burning. They are great community folks also, but again, more home stationed and quite comfortable to do so. Often quiet participators if we're looking back at the classroom.
All right. And so when you say that the hunters, you would say ADHD, is that their natural state or is that if they've had some kind of trauma?
What happens is that's their natural state, but if they're not meant to be there, if they've moved from a homebody to a hunter, then that attention directed in the higher dimension now becomes maladaptive. They aren't able to work with it. It actually becomes an anxiety disorder as opposed to a natural response to where they're at. So then it gets labeled because they're either not in the environment where they need to be, so it doesn't fit in the environment of guard or homebody, or because they've been placed in that environment and they don't need to be, it becomes more an anxiety response.
And so what happens if a homebody has to be a guard or a hunter?
If a homebody has to be a guard or a hunter and that's not recognized, their authentic self, their individuality as a homebody isn't recognized, then what happens is those turn into maladaptive behaviors. So if they are, if they've been put in a guard position and they're authentically a homebody, if they go into therapy that doesn't support their homebody, doesn't work from the homebody, things that would work for them therapeutically from a homebody standpoint, it's really hard for them to get back to their authentic selves and actually feel that they have a true sense of well-being.
So, Barbara, I'm curious then, how would you address issues for each of these types, the hunter, the guard, and the homebody, in therapy?
In therapy, it would be helping them find out where they felt they fit, both as a hunter, guard, or homebody authentically, and then start to work with that authentic self. If they feel that they're a natural guard and they've had to become a hunter, the way I've seen it over the years is that we're almost kind of a third of everything, a third hunters, a third guards, a third homebodies. So, for instance, if you take a homebody who's had to become a guard, what happens is often maladaptive behaviors like OCD, et cetera, start to happen. So we work from where they are as a homebody and start to build up that sense of well-being, that it's okay that that's who you were to begin with. And what does that look like for you, and what kind of passions, and what kind of things that can you do outside of a fear base that would support you in the homebody? And that's where, for instance, journaling works for authentic homebodies. Journaling very rarely works for people who are authentic hunters. Or people who are homebodies don't do well in outward bound programs where hunters flourish in them. So it's a matter of working therapeutically to find out with that person where that authentic sits the most comfortable for them, and taking that fear center of the brain and trying to move it into the more compassionate, passionate place where you can thrive from a more positive psychology.
Now, Barbara, you're doing a workshop on tribal theory.
Yeah, I actually do a course in it. It's a 5-part course. It's over a 3-day period. It's rather intense because it is based in trauma, and of course the people attending will be working with the trauma theory, but also talking about how fear, anxiety are different. There's quite a bit of history also around when positive psychology started to happen, or we lost it, which was just after the First World War when we were dealing with a lot of events that created community trauma. And then we look at childhood, adolescent, middle age, elderly, and symbolic and ritual trauma.
Cool. Now, this community trauma, what's the difference between community trauma and personal or familiar trauma?
Community trauma often is based natural. I work a lot in disaster response. So a natural disaster and a man-made or person-made disaster have two different reactions. As you can imagine, a natural disaster is often something people couldn't do anything about, where a person-made disaster or human disaster-made disaster, there's blame. And wherever there's blame, there's shame. So what happens to a community is that blame and shame come into play. So trauma that affects a community has a contagion effect often. So people are feeling things and feeling responses that are more community-based. And that talks about how do we get people within the community and then again looking at them in the hunter-guard homebody response and how do we group them so that they can work with community trauma that's happened to the community that they've responded to and how well they can respond to it in a way that authentically will be supportive for them. So on really, really simple terms, some people who have dealt with a community response to trauma, some folks are really good at, you know, putting the casseroles together and baking and handing out water and doing those, you know, authentic homebody caring things where other people are out going to start to patrol to make sure that these events don't happen, and others will hunt and go away and try to bring back more resources for the community.
It's interesting because you would think that the homebody would be the one that has all the empathy.
You would think so, and the home we all of them have empathy. But what happens with the homebody is that they actually have this blend of empathy that's there, but they also have a very acute focus. Homebodies, if you know of people who are homebodies, when they go into a focus, they are truly focused. That's why they make such great researchers. So they have a tendency, although empathetic, they will not be picking up like a guard will. A guard has that sensory, almost sixth sense that's constantly on. They're constantly got their spidey senses open. A homebody might not necessarily do that. They're more focused on that preparation, keeping things in a safe, control manner. So as much as they're empathetic, they seem to be much more focused in safety.
Okay. And so the guard, because again, you'd think that the guard would be the one focused on safety.
Yeah, they're focused on safety, but they're focused more on a borderline kind of guard. A guard can't move, basically. So that's why they stand still and they wait for something to happen. So the reason they empathize so well is because they know what it's like to be thinking the worst first, and they can actually empathize the worst first or people going through the worst quicker because they have to go there to prepare.
So if the homebodies are the ones, like, career-wise, that would be writers or researchers or people who would kind of be more introverted, it sounds like, and focused on their project rather than so much other people.
Right.
What kind of careers would guards typically want to have?
Guards would typically be in a policing position, community social services. We know that one well. Anything, the firefighter is sort of there, though the firefighter has also a responder, has a homebody taste to them. There's some that kind of sit on the cusp. Firefighters often have a home base, as you know, with a fire hall. It's very important to them that home base is there. So they have a real presentation of guarding the home. So there's sometimes a bit of a mix. It's like you can get a hunter who can actually, if maladaptive, turn into a warrior if needs aren't met, too. So the guard also takes on, they can be more, like you might have a reporter, but they're more out on the front line. They're more war correspondents that I've worked with who have come back with responding to trauma, that I've done trauma work with. They have a guard mentality, too. And their challenge is once they put the camera down and realize what they've been filming, that has a huge impact on them. And then a hunter would be somebody who's literally out traveling, not easily sitting still, very good at finding out world views and responding to global environmental challenges, medical challenges, those kind of things. They'll go worldwide to look for things, more of a world view.
So, Barbara, I'm finding, like, I feel like I'm not any of these. I'm like all of them.
Exactly. And part of that is once you find out where you sit, you'll start to realize that we all have a little bit of everything. And that's great. But when you're having a lot of maladaptive behaviors or depressing or having, unhealthy feelings of being, something is missing. So that authentic self is not getting nurtured. So we all have a little bit, but when it's not working, when we're not feeling a sense of well-being, then something is out of whack. And that's the authentic piece that we work with therapeutically.
So, Barbara, are you able to take basically the results of how people are behaving now, the maladaptive behavior, and use that to determine what their tribe would have been or what their position in the tribe would have been?
Yeah, usually with some discussion, you're definitely able to do that. What really happens with the tribal theory is as you explore it with the person, they're able to put their stories, their thoughts. They start looking at their family as a tribe. They start looking at themselves and where they fit in. They start looking at their workplace, etc. And as they look at all their different aspects of their lives, they're able to start pinpointing where it doesn't feel right and to look at the maladaptive behavior. So if they're having a lot of maladaptive, they're going, okay, obviously I'm taking on guard behaviors. I'm not comfortable with it. It's a maladaptive behavior. Where in my life have I had to become a guard where that wasn't where I wanted to be? And if that happened, where was I headed otherwise that took me off that and into a guard? Mm-hmm. And it's the acceptance of that often helps you to start to explore where your authentic self is.
Cool. Well, Barbara, what do you think that listeners most need to know about tribal theory? Where would you like to take the rest of the hour?
I think what I'd like them to know most about the hunter-guard homebody is that once they see that target, that there is a tribe and that we are reacting tribally authentically, I think it's important for us to realize that from looking at neuroscience, from looking at evolution, from looking at all those sciences, including intergenerational science that's happening now, which is fascinating cellular science, that we do have an authentic place and that we don't have to be everything. We have our culture right now wants you to be everything, and I think through that is becoming this feeling of not being able to be your authentic self. And by realizing where you are at and maybe exploring your authentic self, you'll also be able to see that, you know, you're not a hunter and that's okay. You're not a guard and you're asked to be put in that position so that you can see that it's not about becoming a victim as much as you took on an incredible challenge. You came up with these creative ways of dealing with events that could be negative. And starting to celebrate where we got moved to and how well we adapted to it at the time to come up with the best coping strategies to survive, but it's okay to move back to your authentic self and start getting more joy and love and happiness and acceptance of who you are.
So it sounds like I'm getting the sense that maybe everyone in our culture probably feels like they're all of these things because, like you said, our society expects us to be everything.
Our society expects us, and we're taught and conditioned. So if you think of our school system, and this is very, very simple, simply put and generalized, of course, but if you think of the school system, if you think of it from a tribal perspective, the guards and hunters would not do very well in the school system in a classroom environment. They just don't do very well. And then if you look at our different aspects of learning, there's four basic ways to learn and then 26 off each of those four basic ways, subways of learning. Then if you think of that alone, you've got two-thirds of the tribe not doing very well in the classroom because they can't focus the same way that a homebody might be able to focus. So now we're starting to look at how we're conditioned to say, if you don't learn this way, if you can't learn this way, then you are failing. So the whole idea of self-worth is huge. And then if we look at adolescence, too, from the tribal theory, adolescence is a relatively new thing. It didn't exist before the 40s. You turned 13 and then you started to become an adult. The adolescent is relatively new in our culture. So again, it's this feeling of what am I supposed to be doing? And now our culture presents, in my opinion, a lot more opportunity for adolescents not to take on certain adult characteristics or to meet those needs or to have to go out and guard or hunt or do any of those things, and then they feel lost and they don't feel they have a purpose.
So I'm curious, are you okay if anyone has a question?
Oh, sure.
Okay, so the number is 604-822-2487 if you want to call in and ask Barbara Allen a question. Barbara Allen is a tribal, what do you call yourself?
A trauma therapist, you mean? A
certified trauma therapist, and you specialize in tribal theory, which is something that you developed on your own.
Yes.
And your website is barbaraallen.com. Allen is A-L-L-Y-N. So if you have a question, 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. So when you mentioned, it's interesting about the school, because you mentioned, like, I feel like I'm naturally somewhat of a homebody. Like, I was good with school, and I tend to spend a fair amount of time at home. But the thing is that I don't actually think that that's healthy for me.
Right.
So maybe I'm not really a homebody.
Well, maybe you're not really a homebody, or your conditioning has told you that that's not what you're supposed to do. I mean, we have a culture that makes sure that people take, you know, public speaking and can speak out for themselves. And, you know, this whole culture about being an extrovert. And you might be a natural introvert in a lot of ways and quite enjoy doing so. That doesn't mean that you can't be, you know, speak out through another way, through communicating differently. But we really, a lot of homebodies are quiet participators. And that's something we really don't encourage in our culture. That is changing as we look at computers and our access to be able to interact in media from a quiet place, from a quiet participator place, which to me is fascinating.
Okay, I'm definitely
so the researchers
not.
And the people who are kind of finding out what was going on, who are more homebodies, are now getting onto computers and they're able to quietly participate in web-like protest. And as we see it from a world view, that's making a huge impact.
Interesting, because yeah, I don't. I'm somewhat introverted, but I'm more of an extrovert than an introvert. And I definitely, I'm not a quiet participant. So, and I find like I thrive when I am around people and a lot of energy and things like that. But I just tend to, and maybe that's sort of been, maybe the trauma aspect forced me to be a homebody.
And from the very little you're saying, and we're just playing right now, of course, is I would put you at a hunter aspect, that you like to go out and you like to research. Now, you're bringing it back home, which is comfortable, but you need to leave again. you're okay at home to sit and celebrate and enjoy the meal you brought home. You know, you go hunt, you get something, you bring it back, you enjoy it, but you're ready to move again. And I would think that if you're home, it's nice. But to go out there's probably some anxiety to do that, even though you do it, because you are naturally drawn to go out to hunt. But somewhere along the way, you were told you're not to be doing that. You're to be doing something else.
Interesting. Now, the hunting, we talk, when we're talking about like male-female dynamics, we often talk about the hunter-gatherer.
Right.
Are hunters typically males, or is this a totally different thing?
Well, I mean, we can go gender typically, and I think that is there in the sense of how we're looking at how we're conditioning gender. It's a tough one right now because there's so much gender changes going on that we're much more aware of than before. But even if you look back into tribal from First Nations or other tribes, you'll see that those who chose bisexuality or had kind of a different gender blend were actually given different positions in the tribe where they were honored for having those characteristics, right, or those gifts with them. So that's an interesting piece. But if we look at gender, male, female, very, again, generally, you will see that, yes, a lot of males have that hunter or guard feel. And it's interesting to look at it when we took more females out of the home community, out of the homebody position, and they started going into the community to be guards or hunters, and how that may or may not have affected are children, right? So like the 70s and 80s when there started to be latchkey kids, which is not a term I like, but that was the term that was used at the time, where children were coming home without somebody there, where homebodies would otherwise be nesting there. And what impact did that have on that generation of children? So you started to kind of play with it and see how when we started pulling people out of authentic roles and said you have to be everything, that it's humanly impossible to be good at everything. And also if you look at other tribal places around the world, when people are in their tribes and they're doing their role that they're authentic in, it's quite a comfortable role, and they don't actually suffer from some of the same unhealthy kind of mental challenges that we in this North American culture present.
Well, let's talk about what happens when there's no homebody at home, or there's no guard in the home, all of these things. If there's a lack of this position in the home, then someone is going to have to step up and do that. So
exactly, someone's going to have to step up and do that, and that is a huge challenge. I know in England right now, for instance, when they have families where somebody's missing or the family member may be suffering from alcoholism or any of those things, they will have a social worker that comes up and actually sits in with the family and starts working with the family on a daily basis, helping to fill in for that position so that there is a sense of guard going on or hunter going on, or homebody going on. So it's a very different way of starting to look at family dynamics and what is missing. And if you have missed that, it obviously has its impact, especially if you've had to take. Often it's the guard role that people have had to take.
So let's talk about that, because the whole latchkey kid, I mean, that's a pretty big problem these days, and it has been for a while. What kind of impact specifically does it have on kids with regards to tribal theory?
Well, for me, it's a feeling of, as typical in psychology, it comes back to a feeling of abandonment and not feeling worthy. I think we are very conditioned in this society to have good self-esteem, which it's like having the steam to keep doing things. But to me, there is a difference between self-esteem and self-worth. And somewhere, when you don't have somebody there, when you don't know you can count on somebody in the early part of when the brain is changing and creating to the frontal lobe, coming from the temporal lobe and moving to the frontal lobe, when you are abandoned in that time period, and often people choose addictions and other things, or maladaptive behaviors, the feeling of self-worth is really hard to get to. And it's that self-worth, no matter what you do, you don't feel worthy of it, either of getting the rewards or actually being able to do it. And that's that sense of well-being that we're missing.
So then it would be, and then in order to heal that, you'd need to figure out what your authentic position would be, hunter, guard, homebody.
Yeah, and what I find is even in exploring that, people start to realize that they did the best they could. That's that positive psychology piece. We're not victims. We are people who have had things happen to us, and look where we have come. Look what we've done to try to cope, and to look at that courageous and the strengths you have as you move through trying to find your authentic self. For some people, it's very quick that they can find it. For others, they have to do some exploration. But they start to explore with therapies that they're drawn to, as opposed to therapies they're told they need to take.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned for the hunters the outward bound would be helpful. What about the guards and the homebodies? What kind of therapies work for them?
For the guards, the therapies that work for them as they've had to become a homebody is they need to look at their strengths, that they can move past the anxiety of going out the front door and what the world has to offer. So they're really good at doing things within the community, more community connection, more simple things, whether it goes sitting in a movie theater and being able to do those kind of things, more driving around, movement, you know, being able to go out and get involved in community stuff like Red Cross or any of those things that still have a guard feel. They make great community police. They make great volunteer firefighters. These are things that they're actually doing to resolve some of those feelings of anxiety around where they need to be authentically.
And then what about homebodies?
Homebodies are, I love homebodies. I wish I was one. I don't think I am. Homebodies is more of an acceptance. A lot of homebodies often suffer from self-harm challenges. And so that's the acceptance of self-worth. So they need to do a lot. What works for them is, again, a lot more community connection, but connecting one-on-one. Doing more work with animals is huge for homebodies. They often connect very, very well with animals, especially cats for some reason. but again, it's that caring, anything that can help them care for others in a more home environment. So they do very well working in group homes. They do very well working in taking in foster care, any of those kind of things. Just beautiful, beautiful, where they can cook for others. You'll find a lot of homebodies love cooking shows. They love to be able to look at creating that kind of home environment, anything, again, that represents a home fire.
And I'm curious, Barbara, what are you?
Oh, well, I was I'm a hunter, definitely, for me. I mean, when I was a little girl, it was gathering the garter snakes and putting them in the clubhouse at the back, albeit bringing the girls over to scare them. So in my day, I was referred to as a tomboy. But my father also named me very early a name called Princess Mucky Muck, which was so true. And I certainly lived up to that. Now, in my teens, through my family life, I had to become a guard very quickly. And taking on that, I ended up myself with very, very challenging OCD and anxiety around bad things happening and always waiting for the worst first. And I was very lucky in finding therapeutic stuff that helped me move into the hunter and go out again and do what I needed to do. So that's been extremely helpful. And, of course, crisis work is right down the line of guards. So you can see how I became a guard and started following through on that, which in my own life I've done very, very well, I think, at and accomplished a lot and worked with some fabulous people and hopefully created a legacy of help and support, but it's not my natural state.
Interesting. So how does that work then if you were a hunter but you're working as a guard?
It works for me. For me personally, it works like I do amazing work, but I don't feel like I'm worthy of it. But my self-worth would come into my relationship piece. So I can go out there and take on the world, but in relationships, that's where my self-worth would begin to quiver. So if you take tribal theory and then put it into your relationships, if you're a natural hunter and you connect with a homebody, you can see how there might be some things that start happening where you're not agreeing, like why are you always taking off? You come home for a bit. You know, I just cleaned the house, made dinner, and you're gone again. But if you realize that about each other, there's an acceptance that happens, and then you're able to be your authentic self and connect. For me in relationships, I was never aware that I was a hunter, so I kept on taking a homebody mentality, and that doesn't work for me.
So it sounds like, I mean, when you were first talking about the relationships, I was thinking it sounds like it would be easier to have someone who was more of the same as you. But then for the long term, if someone in the household is going to have to take on each of these roles, then you might be better off to have someone who's not the same.
Yeah, it's interesting, too. If you talk about relationships, you'll find I spoke to a few females last week who were talking some straight women, and they were speaking about how they have often gone with hunter kind of mentality males, but now they've all settled down with a guard. So it's hard to say. But I think what you need to do is, even in families, if you look at the family members, if you're having children and they seem to present with a hunter authenticity, one might be a hunter, one might be a guard, one might be a homebody. That's how you can look at parenting, on trying to meet the needs of each of those, which is interesting too, because then it doesn't become equality as much as equity, right, within the family, whose needs need to be met so we can help them be authentically supportive and have a feeling of self-worth. So if you're with somebody and you're both hunters, that's great, but it's recognizing it and being able to fill in those other pieces with friendships, with coworkers, those kind of things. If you're both hunters, then you want to look at friendships with more guards and homebodies to meet those needs and help a balance in your life.
Okay, that makes sense. And Barbara, you mentioned earlier in the hour that hunters can sometimes become warriors.
Yes.
Can you tell us more about that?
Well, a hunter who is, you can be a hunter, but if you're a hunter where you've been a guard and put into a hunter place, that's where you start seeing the warrior. So as most people know, with any kind of anxiety response or amygdala fear response, there's flight, fright, and freeze. So again, if you move, flight is often a hunter response, freeze is often a guard response, and flight is often a guard response, and freeze is often a homebody response. So if you move a guard into a hunter position, they often take that fight with them, and then you've got a warrior.
Interesting.
So even if we look from, let's just say, the armed forces, where I see, if we overlap into that piece, you'll have the flight, fight, or freeze, and I see hunters mostly as Air Force, out flying, you know, disconnected but still very aware of what they're doing and overview, where I see the guard much more infantry-based, land, and then I see the homebody much more naval-based, at sea, in submarines, on a ship, something more of a home base. Guards don't have a home base, and they're always waiting for the worst first to happen. And then, of course, the hunter, as I said, with the Air Force. So I can kind of, we start kind of overlapping it into all kinds of things, including workplaces. So if you're a business manager and you have a set of employees and you start finding what works for them, you could have a pretty nice running tribe if you're looking at what they're really good at and supporting that need to do so.
And Barbara, if anyone wants to take your course, how can they find out more about that?
They just have to tap into barbaraallen.ca, and my course outline is there, and there's a link straight to the next time, it's the next one that's running, which is in October. And it's all by Skype this time. I've had an awful lot of people from across Canada and the States wanting to take tribal theory. I've, in my presentations of it and courses, a lot of people working in mental health frontline have been working with it and finding it to work really, really well with families, early psychosis, those kind of things. And so with that said, the easiest way for me to get around is Skype.
Cool. And so you said social workers and things like that. Who else would benefit from the course?
Anybody in human resources, anybody who's dealing in crisis, anybody who has to organize folks, but also people who are becoming new parents, people who are concerned or wanting to know more about relationships. It kind of crosses the gamut. It seems that because it's tribal, anybody in the tribe would likely benefit.
All right, well, we just have a few minutes left in the show. BarbaraAllen.ca is the website, and Allen is A-L-L-Y-N, BarbaraAllen.ca, if you want to check out more on her site. And how would you like to close the show?
I'd like to thank you for having me, which is wonderful. And I think what I'd like is that if people are interested in trying this on for size and seeing if it makes sense to them, because if it makes sense, it may, my hope, my dream, is that it'll help us feel that we're worthy to be here. We have a purpose, and we can move from that once we find our authentic self and start celebrating, if we could all celebrate more, how we have survived and what we've done, because we're pretty creative, fascinating, amazing animals.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show today, Barbara. I really appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you, Marie.
Thanks. Take care. All right. So again, her website is barbaraallen.com, B-A-R-B-A-R-A, Allen, A-L-L-Y-N.ca, rather. It's not .com. Barbara Allen, A-L-L-Y-N.ca, if you want to check out her website and the Tribal Theory course. So I'm going to close the show with a couple of songs. Coming up in just a few minutes here on CITR is Parts Unknown with DJ Chris Horrific. So stick around for that. And I'm going to leave you with music. So I'll say goodbye now. I just want to send you lots and lots of love. Be well. I love you so much. Namaste. And here is an oldie but a goodie Canadian song by One to One. It's Angel in My Pocket. I love this song. Bye.
Krishna.